Back to order, and we're going to start with item 6.02, graduation. I'm going to find it here.
Graduation,
yeah, I didn't find it, but that's all right. It's the graduate and dropout rate data dashboards. Okay, would you like to introduce yourselves and proceed?
Good afternoon. My name is Judith Martinez.
Pardon me? Speak up, please.
My name is Judith Martinez.
Okay.
And I'm the Director of Dropout Prevention and Student Reengagement within the Division of Innovation, Choice, and Engagement here at the Department.
My name is Hai Huen. My role is Strategic Data Advisor with the Unit of Accountability and Data Analysis.
Thank you. Please proceed, whoever's in charge here.
Well, good afternoon, and we're very excited to be here today to share information on a tool that's been developed that helps in the communication and use of the dropout and the graduation rate data. As you may know, every January, the dropout rate and the graduation rate from the previous year gets released. And for the last 3 years, we've been doing our best to develop tools and help push out the data so that folks have an understanding of what the data is, as well as have some specific tools to understand it and use it for additional research. So with that, it's my privilege to introduce you to Hai Huen, who is the architect of the data dashboard that was just launched this year in the areas of dropout and graduation. So I think be prepared to be quite amazed because this is a very cool tool.
But we don't have this on board docs, right?
No, we do not. Okay. I will walk you through how you can access it.
Please take
right
into your
tool. Okay.
I will walk you through how to access this tool, but first, I want to give you some information on our approach. When we were working on this tool, we really thought about who is accessing this tool and what their purpose were. And we wanted to create a tool that was providing factual data and relevant information for local people to start this conversation about dropout data and graduation data. And the purpose of the tool is to allow district, schools, educators, parents to compare results at the district level to the state level, district to other districts, school level to the district level, and school result with other schools. So I want to walk you through how you can access the tool. We rebranded SchoolView to make it really accessible. SchoolView is our landing page for all things data. It's really easy for parents and stakeholders to remember that SchoolView is much simpler to type in than cde.state.co.us. So you can just simply type in schoolview.org and you'll be taken to our landing page. And we've organized a page to show data tools with data information. You can access it under Colorado Education Statistics. And then go ahead and click on Dropout Statistic. And it is this interactive data tool right here. When you click on that tool, you'll be taken to a page, this data dashboard that shows all of the relevant data for dropout data. So you'll see, navigating it, you'll see three tabs, states and districts, school, and a map. Now I'll walk you through the functionality of each of these tabs. So in the districts and state tab, you'll get state data for 5 years, and you'll get district data for the past 5 years. This makes it very easy for people to go in and see how districts have improved over time, how it compares with the state. Furthermore, you have the option to select subgroup. So it's not just looking at all students, but you have the ability to drill down by student subgroup. And we've offered all of the subgroups, not just the four major subgroups. We drill down all the way to migrant, gifted, every single group that you can think of.
Okay, I'm sorry. I found out. How did you get to the screen?
SchoolView.org.
So the landing page.
Colorado Education Statistics. It is the fourth one down.
Okay.
Education statistics.
And then dropout statistic. And then click on interactive dropout data. So the rates are color-coded from a gradient of orange, from gray to dark orange, and that signifies the darker the color, the higher the dropout rate. And this is true for graduation rates too. The darker the orange, the higher the graduation rate. Yep. So it makes it really easy. So it makes it really easy to pinpoint where are most of our students dropping out, where are most of students graduating in a visual way. And when you, and the nice thing about this tool is when you hover over a data point, you can see detailed for that particular district. So you can see how many students were counted in the dropout rate, additional information such as their FRL rate. These are contextual information that we want to give folks so that they understand what the data really mean when they have that conversation. And then any other information, like whether it's a small district, because small district could affect the percentage, and whether there are a lot of AEC schools within the district. So that is the district and state tab. So at any time, you can scroll and find your district and then compare the result to the state. And you can change the filter, and it will automatically change both states and district results.
I just want to note that when you hover over and you get the information, the topics that were covered were informed by the districts. So when we were thinking about who the audience is, we really wanted to tailor it to what districts felt was most important for the public to know. So those data points and the hovering pop-ups were identified by the districts.
So on the school tab, it's the same operation. You can just select a district here, and it will show all of the schools within the district. Same hover over operations, and you'll see the same data. And then you can select the subgroup.
Commissioner has a quick question.
Yes.
Hi, really fast. You mentioned that this was recently launched.
That's correct, in January.
Just the dropout piece, or
dropout and graduation.
And graduation. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yep.
How recently has there been an overhaul of the entire school view?
So the landing page was overhauled in late November, just to make navigation easier. But the tools within it are owned by specific units, so that is at their discretion.
Okay. Thank you.
And finally, we're really incorporating GIS, so mapping of the data. It makes it really easy to pinpoint like which district's doing really well, how do the surrounding district do. So when you click on the mapping tab, the map tab, you'll see a picture of all of our Colorado school district. And here, as I mentioned previously, the higher the dropout rate, the darker the color is. So you can really pinpoint out who's doing really well and who's not, who has more dropout or fewer dropout. And at any time, you can hover over any of the data here. So if I hover over one of the data, you'll see this interactive table that pops up and show you 5 years of data. And we realized that people like this visual a lot. They wanted to see the data by subgroup and by year. And you can just select this filter here. Like, I can scroll it back to 2014 and really see how the data has changed over time, and really see how that data changed over time for a particular subgroup. So if I want to see what the result looked like, the dropout result looked like for FRL students over time, I can take the slider and slide it all the way to 2011, so 5 years of data here, and then move it across and look at the map changing interactively, and you can see how the color changes and shift over time.
And when you first go to the site, it's the Colorado Department Statistics, Colorado?
Yes, Colorado Education Statistics.
Colorado Education Statistics. Thank you.
That's all. Do you guys have any questions?
Okay. Any questions from members of the board? That's very impressive.
Yes,
thank you.
And this is all available to the public, right?
That is correct. We
but
made it all available.
We also have school view data that is specific to the department, right? It has more, I don't mean on dropout or graduation rates, but
general information. You know what I'm talking about,
yeah.
Right? Because I thought it was very helpful, would be really helpful to the public, but it's not public, right?
Almost everything in SchoolView is public. There is one function within the Colorado Growth Model software that's the four-quadrant chart with the achievement and growth in there. There's an option in there that they can go through the identity management system to get secure access to get to student level, but it's just one portion. There's secure sign-in, links to our secure data collection system and access system. So only district staff that have access that have been given it from their superintendents can get to that level. Student. Otherwise, everything is publicly available. All the N sizes meet FERPA requirements. So there's nothing that posted that is student-level data.
Okay.
That makes sense.
SchoolView is cool.
That's great.
All right. Any other questions? Thank you very much. We appreciate it. Okay. Let's see. Now we're to item. I guess we can't have lunch again. So 8.01 accountability clock update. Okay, Ms. Pearson, you're on again.
Yep, I know. You guys are you sick of me yet?
Are you a little Pearson show today?
We're almost done. Yeah. You're almost done with me. Okay, so today we wanted to talk with you all about, give you a little update on where we're at with the district and school accountability clock. I know you all had some questions about that, where we are with the process in terms of the hold. So we're going to give you an update on the status of schools and districts, where they are in terms of ratings in the clock, give you an overview of the timeline, and then talk through some proposed processes for going through the recommendations and what your role is with that. Ms. Birdsall is handing out a list just of the schools and districts that are at year five, so because I know whenever we have these conversations, you want to know who those schools and districts are. So just an overview of the school status of where we're at. So this chart shows the schools in the state that are on priority improvement and turnaround, the total that are priority improvement and turnaround across the top, and then by year on the clock, so how many years they've had that rating. This is all of July 1, 2015. I think if you remember, we give ratings in the fall. Usually those get finalized November, December. The school or district starts on the clock the following July is how statute's written. So we have 18 schools at priority improvement year five right now, 11 at year five that are on turnaround. So there's 29 total that are priority or improvement or turnaround. I know you all have heard the 30 number before. There were 30 officially. One of those schools closed this coming school year, which is why it dropped down to 29. So those 29 schools in year five are located in 18 different districts. There's also, I want to direct your attention to those on turnaround because there were some questions about when the board can act and what schools they can act on. The board has discretion or needs to act on schools and districts that have reached the end of year five, but also may act with schools that are on turnaround that have not made progress. So we just wanted to highlight those for you.
Those are the ones that we are required to act.
So the ones that are at year five, you're required to act on by June 30th, 2017, the way the hold currently is.
Anytime between now and then.
Now and then. The action would need to be taken by June 30th, 2017.
Schools are in that category on year three. We have some.
Yep, you've got other schools that are on turnaround, and the board, you do not need to act, but you have authority to direct an action to schools and districts that are on turnaround that have not made progress over time. So we just wanted to point that out. Thanks. And then in terms of districts that are on the clock, most of our districts that are on priority improvement or turnaround are at year five. There's seven that are at priority improvement, one that's on turnaround. That's so you've got eight total that are at year five. You've got one district at year four and one district at year one. So, and no others on turnaround except those at year five.
What is the lavender color indicate?
The lavender color on this.
It's very pretty.
District's on the clock.
Okay. It's very pretty.
I'm sorry, what did you say?
The district is on the clock if it's highlighted in lavender.
Oh, the district.
The district itself is. Yes.
And it's the school.
Not just the school. Yep, both.
Okay, so let's just talk through a little bit of timeline, and then Brenda's going to go into more detail with it. As of July 1, 2016, with the way statute is currently written, to the 29 schools and 8 districts will remain on year 5 of priority improvement. They're not going to move forward, and remember, they're frozen, so they'll just stay at year 5. They haven't hit the end of year 5 yet at that point. Next fall, again, as we currently have statute in the state, new school plan types and district accreditation ratings will be given. That's what we're planning for, and that's what we talked about with the target setting earlier today.
But what about miracles? You just assume that they're not going to change within the year?
Oh, that is a good point. So that's where they won't have a new rating before July 1, 2015. But in the fall, when we give new ratings, they may come off the clock then. That's a very good point. So there may not end up being 29 schools and 8 districts still at year 5 because some may come off. Some may close. Who knows what may, a lot of things could change at that point. So that's a very good point. Next fall and winter, we'll have recommendations from both the commissioner and the state review panel for you all on the schools and districts. We have some of those school state review panel reports for some of the schools and districts already, but there may be some re-reviews for them. And then by June 30th, the board needs to direct an action to the local school board for those 29 schools and 8 districts if they remain on the clock. To be in alignment with what's in state law right now. So that's kind of the big picture overview. Brenda's going to now talk through with you guys the process for how we understand the process by law and how we've been working with schools and districts around it, and then what some of those pathway options are.
Great, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Brenda Bouch, by the way. I work on all things related to the accountability clock. And this slide shows you a high-level overview of the accountability clock process. So as we envision the processes leading up to when you would direct action toward a local school board for those at the end of the clock or in turnaround not making progress. So there are three main components that you'll see kind of in the middle of the flowchart. And the first two are the commissioner recommendation and the state review panel recommendation. These are both outlined in statute. So they're statutorily required recommendations that will come to you in a formal written report. And the commissioner recommendation is based off of a CDE staff analysis of a variety of factors of local data, leadership, our grants and supports that we've given the school over the years, CDE staff interaction with the school, and local context, so what is actually feasible to implement. And that whole report will come to you again, we envision, later this fall and winter for these schools. You did receive one formal report through Interim Commissioner Asp last year for Aurora Central High School, so that kind of gave you an idea of what we envision these reports to look like. And the state review panel report, as has been mentioned, those were released for the schools and districts on year 5 last year. And due to the accountability pause, there are some schools and districts that will receive another site visit this spring. So you'll receive a new set of reports and possibly new recommendations for some of the districts and schools on year 5, but not necessarily all of them. And that will happen this summer. So the third piece on this flowchart that we envision happening is the district's proposal. And this is not statutorily required, so it's an optional piece. But we really are encouraging districts to come forward with their own plan and their own proposal for what they'd like to pursue as an end-of-clock pathway. So we want this process to be locally driven. We want districts to own their pathway. And so to that end, we have already been engaging with districts to encourage them to do this and to really to provide some professional development to district staff around what a pathway could look like and how that could be implemented. And when I refer to the pathways, this is the list of statutory pathways. And just it's important to note, the state review panel is constrained to this list. So when you receive the set of reports from the state review panel, They will all be chosen from this list. You won't receive a recommendation other than what's here on this slide. The statute also does confine you to choose from this list for a school-based action. So when you are directing action to a local school board for a school in the CLAC, you do have to choose from this list, that's the list of options under school actions. There is some flexibility in statute, however, regarding districts on the CLAC, and this is where it gets kind of a little nuanced with the law, that if you may choose, if a district is on the CLAC, to direct action to the local school board for something that's not on this list. But again, if you look at the numbers on the sheet, there are much fewer districts on the CLAC. There's 9 total. We had 8 coming up on year 5. So for those 8, you could go off this list. But for the 29 schools that are coming up on year 5, you are confined, as the law is written now, you are constrained to choosing from these actions. That being said, and I know this list is limited, we do think there's flexibility within the management pathway for that to be interpreted in a variety of different ways to adapt towards local context. So we envision this being a possibility for small rural districts, for example, where management doesn't just mean that an educational management organization comes in and takes over the school's functions, but it could also be a scenario where a district brings in an external partner to help support and provide targeted interventions around certain management functions. So that is something that we believe can be interpreted that way. That's the way the state review panel has been interpreting the management pathway as well. So in the recommendations they released last summer, there is some variation in how management's interpreted.
Dr. Flores?
Yes. Could something like this happen, that a district decides to have a magnet school, and the magnet school is... You don't have the same organization. You bring in a new principal, possibly, with a new idea for curricula. Changes. Could that possibly happen as well, where it's within the district to change it, instead of a charter school to a magnet school? And where management has been changed, and
I do believe that would fall, I mean, if it were to fall under one, it would be under management. I think we would confer with Tony to see if that would be an appropriate interpretation of the management pathway.
Mr. Dill?
I think that that might be an appropriate determination depending on how you structured that. Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you for that question.
So if teachers maybe got together and wanted to do that, or a magnet school of some kind that would, a science magnet, or okay. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you for that question. And I would say as well that we are working on, city staff, we are working on a set of tools and rubrics to evaluate proposals when they come their way. So for those districts that are wanting to engage and collaborate and come forward with their own proposal, we're working on so, for example, if a district's bringing forward an innovation zone plan for a group of schools on the CLAC, we have a rubric that we've developed, and it's still in draft form, but we're working on it to evaluate if that plan's rigorous enough to meet our expectations for what it needs to look like. Again, given the context of this specifically being our lowest performing schools, is that plan meeting our expectations and that level, high level of rigor? Is this going to be dramatic, bold change that's going to move these schools off the CLAC? And so we are starting to engage with districts around that as well. And we would do the same with the management pathway. So we would evaluate that proposal and say, does this meet our expectations for change?
Thank you.
Absolutely.
Yes, Ms. Masnick.
So I'm wondering if in the event that either they came up with or we suggest that they get new management, reorganize, whatever, and when you were talking about having them get some outside management assistance, who pays for that? Does the district have to pay for that?
That's a very good question.
Have we gone there yet?
That is something that we have considered in terms of our coaching with districts, is to consider their budget and what they... Right now, we don't have funds set aside for it. And so when we are considering... Again, looking at, just to use Innovation Zone as an example, when we're reviewing those plans, considering
asking the district to consider what are the budget implications of that plan, and is it feasible from a budget perspective for them to implement all of these changes that they've outlined in the plan.
But don't you give money? Excuse me.
Go ahead.
This is related. Don't you provide monies for innovation schools? The state provides monies. If the district or school wants to go into innovation, aren't there monies set aside for that? I remember a school near me when I was teaching back then, and they were able to get $100,000.
We didn't have innovation zones back in the teaching.
Yeah. I don't think there's
innovation school.
I don't think there's state funds for that.
Charter schools,
we're checking. We'll let you know.
Okay, we'll see if we can get an answer.
There's no state money.
Thank you,
Dr. Schroeder. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. Dr. Schroeder.
I just looked on here, and I think if I counted right, there are about 8 rural districts here. If I get rural. Have we heard anything from BOCES organizations about thoughts, offers of help, anything?
I have not, but I don't want to speak for other CDE staff who certainly may have, and for our field managers and performance managers that are out there talking with them. I know that we have encouraged schools to contact their BOCES and to think through, we've started thinking through how we can work with them around providing some PD and training as schools are coming up to the end of the clock around what their pathways options are, and working through BOCES to do that. Do you want to add anything?
No.
Okay. We can look into that more, though.
Well, I'm just wondering, sometimes it helps to do partnering.
Right.
And if you've got a BOCES that's got some very strong programs, there would be a way to partner those with schools. I mean, it's the same thing we might do in districts. If we've got districts that have very strong programs and not, that would be, I would think that would be a solution that they might bring forward.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the same model from BOCES would be more helpful, simply because geographically they're closer and they might be able to share in PD, or I'm not the person with the solutions. I'm just thinking if that isn't a place to find some solutions.
Thank you. And I know within the BOCES right now, in terms of support and like sharing best practices and instructional models and PD, that they're doing a lot of that in general for all
in general,
schools.
Right.
But I don't know that there's anything specific to focus to accountability clock, but we can definitely look, and we just may not be aware of that.
Ms. Rankin?
My thought is, if they've been doing this for 5 years, I'm sure they have reached out to the BOCES in their district to, you don't wait till the end of the clock before you start asking for help.
Sadly.
Commissioner?
Hope springs eternal.
Commissioner?
And listen, Brenda, what kind of communication do we have with these schools, CDE? How often are they speaking to their leadership?
Absolutely. Lisa, do you want to come up and talk about that? Because we have some ongoing, regular conversations we have, and then we work through performance managers and different venues for having conversations. Lisa's talked with all of them on year 5 around the state review panel and has really been helping them through that way. So do you want to speak to that a little bit? There's one there.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. All superintendents and board presidents receive an annual letter that alerts them to the fact that they're on the clock and what the potential consequences are. So there is written communication that we have record of, just to be clear.
When did that go out?
That would go out in the fall, usually around November, December.
Okay, but because we were frozen, did it actually go out this last November?
This past year?
No, we didn't send a new.
So, okay. So continue.
Alyssa's also referencing the fact that all of the districts that have a school on the clock that is in year 5, or if the district's on the clock year 5, they've had interaction with the state review panel. So I've been in phone contact with all of them just to get them going and setting up site visits, but then also just to check back in once they got their reports from last spring. And as a result, then it's opened up opportunities for additional supports, and in a lot of cases coming and talking with their board just about the facts of what does this mean and where do we go from here. So we've been actually in contact with them quite a bit.
Mr. Chair, just, and this has more to do with CDE operations, but it's for the board's benefit. Next week, let's get together and talk about a very formal structure of communication with these districts and schools so that there's no surprises to anybody at any point. And you know, documented with agendas, who was on the phone, or, you know, I want everything from this point forward. And I want to talk more about that next week.
Can I just jump in and say to that effect, thank you, Commissioner, for that suggestion. That's exactly what we were hoping to capture as well, cause in our commissioner's recommendation that we would be presenting to you We are absolutely, one of the biggest things we want to capture there is CDE, the history of CDE's support and interaction with the districts. And in addition to the state review panel facilitating those interactions, we do have performance managers and field managers that interact with these schools and districts on a regular basis, some more intensively than others. So, for example, if one of the schools is in the CDE's turnaround network, for example, they're receiving very intense, high level of support, whereas some other schools maybe are not getting less frequent interaction. But we, either way, we want to be capturing that and making sure that's reflected and that we're
building
on that.
Brenda, you mentioned the state review panel. Is the state review panel an ongoing entity? I mean, they've gone out, they've made their site visit, they issued their report, but then are they still having communications with the schools?
Mr. Chair, please. Thanks. So they are, they do not continue to be in contact with the school or the district, except for when it's, you know, triggered, such as through the site visit. They are not having, the only time they ever have direct contact is during that site visit. But they do document reviews over time during the course of the clock. So they've been keeping notes and things like that, but the only time they're in contact is during that site visit.
Thank you. And this is our last slide. We just wanted to present with you or talk just a little bit about how all of these recommendations will come forth to you. And so, again, knowing that you have until June 30th, 2017 to issue recommendation, direct action and consider the recommendations for 29 schools and 8 districts, there's a variety of ways to approach this. One thing to consider is that there will be new school performance frameworks and district performance frameworks coming out this fall, or late summer, early fall. And so one option is to wait until that new data is presented in case some schools come off the clock, for example, or if they're just able to demonstrate progress with the data. There's a variety of reasons why that's important. And if we did wait until after those were released, then we're looking at around November to really start bringing forward to you recommendations to consider. And if we were to spread them out, then there would be maybe a minimum of 2 to 3 districts per board meeting. Of course, there are a variety of ways to do this. We could lump more together. We could bring them earlier before data is released. This is just one option we would present to you just to kind of get you guys thinking about it and reacting to it.
I just had, as of now, we've got 2 districts that are really interested in coming forward. And you've already heard from Aurora some to share their plan, but they want to come back in May, and so does Pueblo, to say this is the pathway forward. We heard from State Review Panel, we've been working with CDE, this is the path that we would like you all to direct us to or to be approved for going down that route. There may be additional schools and districts, as Brenda said, that's what we've been trying to help the schools and districts get to that point where there's some ownership and real belief that that's the way that they want to move forward, and knowing that that will help them move forward, but that they also own it, so we're not spending our time fighting about what they should be doing going forward. So there may be additional volunteers that want to come besides the 2 that we know about right now.
Dr. Schroeder?
Didn't all these guys come before us already?
Not all of them, I don't think.
Well, there were two or three districts a month. Yes. It was hard. It was really hard. And to go to Joyce's point, there were districts that really waited a long time to even acknowledge that there was anything amiss, and felt to me somewhat resentful. I mean, we invited them to come, but it was more about telling us what their challenges were, and they were not.
True.
They weren't there about what are we going to do now. And I don't want to repeat that.
Dr. Shovel.
So I recall that also, and I saved all those reports. I think I might have 6 to 8 or something, maybe more like 6 or 7, where they did present to us, and I really didn't recall it that way. I really felt like they were kind of coming with their hat in hand, saying, we've done this, we've done that, we're doing progress monitoring, we've hired a consultant, and these are our data. So I guess I feel like...
Some.
I guess I don't remember that they were resentful at all. I felt kind of bad because I felt like they're kind of coming sort of desperate, saying, mm-hmm. these are the 10 things we've done, and our data is still an issue. So I don't know, I get concerned that this could become... just highly politicized as to what happens to these schools. I think we have to be very cautious, thoughtful, and think very deeply about implications. And I think that's what we're trying to do.
So it's Aurora and Pueblo that are interested in coming back. I think I remember both of those, so they've been here within the last 12 months. And I guess before I would want to have them back for a meeting, I would certainly want the department's analysis of what they proposed last time and whether it's made any difference. And I would think that would be, the board needs to be armed with that information before we could really evaluate any proposal or any new ideas that they may have. Are we planning to do that?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, we are engaged with both of these districts and have been reviewing drafts of their plans. They are both pursuing innovation, and we have been working with them for that. We did issue, so Aurora is coming back, Aurora Public Schools is coming back for Aurora Central High School, which is the school that we did issue a formal recommendation to you all. So we would bring that forward again, that formal recommendation that we presented on behalf of Interim Commissioner Asp, along with their state review panel. And this, for them, it would then be the district bringing to their formal innovation plan for approval from you under the Innovation Schools Act. So the Innovation Schools Act has its own statutory requirements for you all to approve innovation plans. And so Aurora would be bringing that forward on behalf of Aurora Central High School.
Quite the question I asked.
The
question I asked is, they've been here roughly a year ago, or
yes.
pretty close. Whatever they proposed at the last time they were there, and I think we encouraged them to try certain things, has it made any difference? And that's the analysis we need, because if that hasn't made any difference, you'd have to be pretty reluctant to say, well, okay, go try it again.
Well, wait a minute. But the way I remember Aurora's efforts, it was organizational. They were coming to us telling us the process. They were describing the process for sort of reorganizing the school. And I don't know that they got to the student achievement, change in the classroom kind of points. Am I wrong?
To refresh your memory, they came forward to ask, they wanted to pursue innovation. They wanted to create an innovation zone. They're calling them action zones. For a group of schools, one school's in year 5 on the clock, a couple other are on the clock as well in different years. So they came forward to you all asking, if we pursued this path, when we come back in a year, would this be our formal, would you support us formally pursuing this pursuant to the Education Accountability Clock Act?
Instead of doing something else. Right.
So the discussion there was around more informal of how would that, what would that zone entail at a broad, very informal level. They now have developed a formal, very detailed innovation zone plan. And so we are engaging with them, and we are analyzing it. And to your point, Mr. Chair, we will have a formal analysis of that plan as from our CDE staff standpoint and what we think of it. And we're currently undergoing that right now. And so they would be coming and bringing forward their innovation zone plan to the board for formal approval. And it's a very, again, it follows the Innovation Zone Schools Act requirements, and it will be detailed to you all at that point.
Yes, Dr. Sure.
Can we ask them to have incremental goals so that at the end of year 1, end of year 2, end of year 3, so there's a monitoring that's not at the end of year 3, but that it's continuous, so that they know and we know there's movement, there's not movement? What are the kind of variances that we would want to see or not want to see?
Great, yes, great idea. Thank you.
Okay.
Okay, any, yes, Ms. Goff?
Yeah, I realize probably it's inherent to this new round of talks with us, but actually an update on the governance, the context changes that have happened. I mean, we'll get the demographic changes through their update, I would think, when they come to talk to us, but things like change in school board personnel, what's happened to their teacher and employee and educator attrition rates, what kind of impact has that had on the last, since they came and talked to us last time? I think it was 2014, wasn't it, when we had that series of monthly gatherings, and my memory wants to tell me we talked to 10 school districts during that spring. It was pretty intense and educational, real informational. My impression was they were glad to have fun. They were glad after they experienced that we weren't terribly awful people. and it felt like everybody walked away with some sense of productive time spent. Yeah. But this next time, this is a little higher level. Yeah. So just what's the life changes that have happened? Okay. That can also impact how people approach problem solving and what they want to invest and so forth. So I'm hoping that will be provided.
Absolutely. And we can provide some of that information in our report, too, in the commissioner's report to you all. We try and get some of that deeper context in terms of staff turnover and board turnover, and we can include that in there for you. And if there's other things you all would like to request, we would love it to get feedback on that one that we did for Aurora Central. If there's things missing, if there's information that isn't relevant, just let us know, because we can tailor those reports for you.
Ms. Rankin.
When I first came on the board, I wasn't aware of a lot of these different plans for districts. And I was very concerned, and I see now I have reason for concern, but since I've been on this board, I've reached out to the superintendents, the Board of Education of these areas, and I have educated myself on how difficult it is for some of them, but also educated them on you and what can be available to them. And I have to say, some of them have not reached out, and they should have before now, but I think a lot of it is communication. I think that is so key, and I have learned a lot, and I have a lot of people. I have 11 on this list, and I mean, it bothers me, but I think if I can help them champion in any way, just through communication, if nothing else, I am willing to do that. So, Mr. Commissioner, when you get this going, please keep me in that loop.
Okay. All right. Let's see. Are you all?
Okay.
Just a final.
Yes.
And Brenda and Lisa, let's work on a document for the State Board. It's almost an unofficial, if you were to rank these by who is most actively engaged in trying to turn it around themselves, scale of 1 to 30. Let's prepare something like that for the State Board, just so they know who they really need to be focusing on and pushing. And that's pretty much your opinion is what I'm asking for. But just know that it's a public record.
I know.
So, that's don't great. Share all of your opinion.
Don't call them slackers. It's horrible.
Okay. Any other questions or any other comments, staff? Yes, Dr. Flores?
It's Escuela Tlateloco that's here. I guess a couple of years ago, maybe a year and a half ago, I was at a meeting where the board decided that they were going to close that school. What? Why is it here if they've decided to close it?
The school is still open this school year with Denver Public Schools for the 15-16 school year, I believe. And this is where Denver Public Schools probably is the best entity to answer this question, but I believe that they have been working with the school that they're not going to renew that contract for the coming year. So I think they're working among themselves to figure out what happens for the school going forward.
Is there anything else you want to?
No, you all finished.
Thank you, Ms. Chair.
Thank you very much.